Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and amazing as it may seem to most Americans, there are places in the world where you can put together a gigantic anti-democracy protest. One such place is China. Here with me now to talk about what's been happening in Hong Kong this summer is New York Times reporter Michael Forsyth, who is calling in from Hong Kong. Hi, Michael. Welcome to WNYC, and hello from New York.
Hey, good to be here, Brian.
And so before we can understand the anti-democracy sentiment that was evident in a march in Hong Kong, take us back to July 1st, when there was a huge pro-democracy march in the city center. Who was behind that, and what are they hoping for specifically?
So there was, a, like you said, a huge rally on July 1st. That's the anniversary of the handover of Hong Kong from British rule to Chinese rule back in 1997. And it's become a rallying day for pro-democracy people. And this year's was particularly large. The reason is that there is a movement afoot and a process in place to bring universal suffrage to Hong Kong. It'll be the first place on Chinese soil where that'll happen. And
what do you mean universal suffrage?
So that means that everybody in Hong Kong who's a registered voter, and that's pretty much anybody over 18, including foreigners who have lived here for 7 years or more, will be able to vote for the chief executive. That's the top elected leader in Hong Kong. And so that looks like that might very well happen. The problem is, who is going to be on the ballot, the nomination process for this chief executive. And that's where the debate is happening, and that's where the controversy is ensuing.
Who gets to nominate the candidates?
And so right now it looks like the candidates are only going to be nominated by this nominating committee, which is about 1,200 people, mostly pro-Beijing businessmen, people, you know, who are sympathetic with the Communist Party in Beijing. And so the fear among the democracy activists in Hong Kong is that while they may have the so-called universal suffrage, one person, one vote, it's really going to be meaningless because there's not going to be true choice on the ballot.
And one of the pro-democracy groups is called Occupy Central with Love and Peace. We've heard that word occupy somewhere before. Any connection?
That's right. There's a really big difference, I think, between Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Central. Occupy Central is a very broad-based group of people. In fact, it's almost an umbrella group for the pro-democracy camp now. And it includes students, really youth-driven movement, university professors, religious leaders, even some bankers in this highly, like New York, this is a highly banker-intensive town. And so they care very much about the civic freedoms and civil liberties that Hong Kong enjoys that the rest of China just doesn't have. I lived in Beijing for years, and I just came to Hong Kong a year ago, and it's just amazing to see a Chinese city with the civil liberties that we take for granted in the United States. Freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, you know, which is exercised all the time here in Hong Kong. Freedom of religion, which, you know, is just not respected in China at all. And while there are problems with it and definitely an erosion of freedom of the press as well, it's just an amazing place to – it's just amazing to me to see a Chinese city of this size with those civil liberties flying the red and gold flag of the People's Republic. And it works.
And listeners, I wonder if any of you out there right now are originally from or have ties to Hong Kong. Call in and talk about that unusual balance of being a kind of free city within the Beijing dominated China. How has this worked out these past 17 years? 212-433-WNYC, and we'll get to this anti-democracy protest now. And if anybody listening has ever participated in an anti-democracy protest or know anybody who has, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's talk about the uniqueness of Hong Kong and what it says for freedom and democracy in China in general, and this idea of people going into the streets to protest for more self-determination or for less. 212-433-9692 for Michael Forsyth, New York Times correspondent in Hong Kong. So, Michael, take us to the huge anti-democracy march, which happened, I guess, a week and a half ago. Was this a direct response to the pro-democracy protest on July 1st that you just described?
That's right. It was a direct response and a signal, from the establishment, from the lovers of anti-democracy, that these people who are thinking about this Occupy Central with Love and Peace, which is basically a plan to shut down the central business district of Hong Kong with a sit-in protest, a peaceful one, should not go forward. And so they were trying to make that point. There was an independent group, a polling group, said that about 88,000 people took part in the anti-democracy protest, which was on the 17th of August, so a little over a week ago. That's in contrast to about 172,000 in the July 1st protests that this same group said took part. The organizers of the Occupy Central, the July 1st pro-democracy demonstrations, said there were more than 500,000. I was out there. It sure did feel like it was way more than 172,000. Mm. It was incredible to see how many students were out there July 1st. But I have to say that there were certainly some very sincere sounding people on August 17th, these anti-democracy people as well. A very different crowd, Brian, though, from July 1st. First of all, they were kind of in uniform. These people, the anti-democracy crowd, a lot of them were wearing matching colored T-shirts. It was a very hot day. And
what are the colors of anti-democracy?
Well, it's kind of funny. I think it was orange. I don't know how they picked orange, but people wore matching T-shirts based on their hometown in mainland China. So a lot of these people, they all spoke, they sort of the language in Hong Kong is Cantonese, which is a dialect of Chinese. And Mandarin is kind of the Latin of China, the standard language. But a lot of people in Hong Kong don't speak it that well. But I tell you, everybody that I talk to, and I speak Mandarin, at this protest last Sunday, spoke Mandarin quite well, indicating that they did originally probably come from the mainland, and all of them that I talked to certainly said they did, with one exception.
Just satisfied with the status quo, or do they figure any chance to vote is better than not voting at all? So just, okay, we're going to have the universal suffrage. That's good enough, regardless of who the candidates are. Or was the whole thing fake, with the crowd bought and paid for or intimidated or coerced into showing up?
Yeah, so the reality is kind of muddy. There were definitely people there, Brian, who were paid. There's a mounting amount of evidence that reporters have gathered of payments being made to people. There were certainly people there who had no idea why they were there. A lot of foreign, what we call helpers in Hong Kong, which are nannies who come from Indonesia and the Philippines, were there in their orange T-shirts as well. They don't speak Chinese, Cantonese, or Mandarin, but they were brought there by their employers to make it look like, I guess, that there were more people, out protesting. The people who were there on their own accord that I talked to seemed to spout lines that were very similar to the party line, literally the party line, the Communist Party line. We want stability. We want to have harmonious relations. We don't want disorder. We don't want chaos, was the pretty common line I got from these people.
212-433-WNYC. Philip in Rego Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Philip.
Hi. My grandfather was born in Hong Kong, and he went to China in the 1930s. That time, that went to Shanghai in 1930s. that time Shanghai is much better than Hong Kong, but then the war broke out. So he, you know, he go back to Hong Kong, and I think like 39, 40s. Then when the communists take over, he went back to Shanghai. So Hong Kong is, I think Hong Kong is a very unique Chinese history. So after the 1979, you know, liberalist policy, China learned a lot from Hong Kong. And I think in Canton area, like now Shenzhen, they have a great influence from Hong Kong. So, you know.
From the British rule era of Hong Kong?
Well, yeah, but, you know, in the 19, during the Cultural Revolution, like Hong Kong, like people in Hong Kong, people, you know, my family, is they mailed money to China. So that time, Chinese are very poor, but the people make Hong Kong make a lot of money. So they, you know, they send to their relative in China. So that time, like, you know, I remember 150 Hong Kong dollars, can buy a lot.
And that gave other people an interest in emulating Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Philip, thank you. Thank you so much. Keep calling us. Dave in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I'm wondering if, you did mention that the people of Hong Kong speak Cantonese, and I know that, and as well as the people in Beijing speak Mandarin. It's more like, I think they're like separate ethnic groups now at this point. And think this conflict in Hong Kong right now and the protests more like something similar what happened back for decades over in Western China with the Uyghur?
That's a great question, Michael. Does it represent ethnic group versus ethnic group than the ideology of democracy versus anti-democracy?
It's not an ethnic conflict. The people are in Hong Kong are Chinese, Han Chinese, same ethnic group as the people in northern China. And so it's not an ethnic issue. It's really an ideological issue, and not between Chinese people and Hong Kong people, but really between the idea of, you know, democracy supporters, people who want to keep what they have in Hong Kong and build on it, the civil liberties that they have, and the Chinese state, basically, which is a Leninist authoritarian state, does not permit freedom of speech, does not permit freedom of assembly, does not permit freedom of religion, and certainly is not a country ruled by law as Hong Kong is. So they've got, you know, they've got a lot to lose in Hong Kong, and they don't take for granted what they have. So it's really an ideological divide. And I would say also, I think one of the concerns the mainland government has with allowing Hong Kong people to freely choose their leader and freely nominate or have a real choice in the nomination is the influence on the rest of China. Hong Kong is influential. If other people in China see this democracy flourishing in Hong Kong, won't they demand the same thing? And to the leaders in Beijing, that might not be a very pleasant outcome.
I'm amazed that it's not happened yet, or that Hong Kong has been allowed to remain as free as you were describing it earlier, with a lot of freedom of speech and freedom of assembly after they were reacquired by China in 1997. Because China is so, you know, the leadership in China, as you know, is so deathly afraid of mass protest movements breaking out toward democracy and more of those kinds of what we consider First Amendment freedoms. So why haven't they cracked down on Hong Kong more once they reacquired it?
Hong Kong's really the goose that lays the golden eggs in many ways. It's a global financial center, by many measures, the most important one in Asia. A lot of Chinese businesses, a lot of Chinese leaders have their money tied up in Hong Kong. If you want to do business in China, you really want to sign contracts in Hong Kong if you're a foreigner, under a robust legal system, rather than in the mainland. It's got such an important role there. And also, not to disparage the Chinese government too much, because they did sign a treaty with the United Kingdom, with the British government when Margaret Thatcher was the prime minister. And the treaty pretty much clearly lays out that Hong Kong will be ruled separately for 50 years, starting in 1997. And what's amazing is that these young people out protesting, they really have a lot to lose because they're only going to be mid-career professionals in 2047 when Hong Kong just becomes another Chinese city. So they see this is part of their lives, the end of these special freedoms that Hong Kong has could very well end in their lifetime unless China itself changes in the meantime. So it really means something to them.
Michael Forsyth, New York Times correspondent in Hong Kong. On these anti-democracy protests, when I was in China in 2012 on a tour for journalists, one of my biggest takeaways was that it was easy enough to find people in the educated elite who were actually kind of anti-democracy. We were introduced to people across the political spectrum on that tour, but that included people who argued that Western democracy leads to gridlock, like, ha-ha, look at you in the U.S. Congress, you can't get anything done, and inefficient government, and that there is such a thing in China's case as a kind of earnest authoritarianism, you know, where they work on behalf of the greater good, or at least that's the claim, much more complicated than, say, the Assad dictatorship in Syria, which is also an authoritarian regime. What's your sense of public sentiment in China about democracy itself?
Yeah, it's again, you know, China's an incredibly diverse, you know, complicated place. There certainly are people who say that and believe that. There are probably more people, although, you know, there's no polling to reveal this because these kind of polls would be illegal, you know, that really want the civil liberties that are enjoyed in countries like the United States. So it's hard to say, but there certainly is that argument. Even in Hong Kong, you have people like that. There are plenty of people on the pro-establishment side that got degrees at Cornell, at Stanford, all over the United States, yet they go back to Hong Kong and they are for the status quo. They are for the pro-Beijing establishment. So there are you know, many, many examples of U.S.-educated people in China who are Communist Party members and loyal members at that. And certainly there's evidence, you know, that they would point to that the Chinese model has delivered a lot economically over, you know, the last three decades or so or more. They certainly have that case. That may be eroding now with increasing pollution, slowing economic growth, you know, and other problems that are cropping up in China now.
And I heard that argument when I was there. Oh, look at your growth rate compared to our growth rate. But of course, China was starting as like a third world country with mass peasant poverty 40 years ago. So I'm not sure it's an apples to apples comparison. So we're almost out of time. But China officials are meeting this week to officially decide upon the question at hand for Hong Kong, this nominating process for the new chief executive of Hong Kong, and how much it will be controlled by Beijing or how much it will be open. And so if it decides to keep Beijing in control, which I gather is likely, what's the reaction going to be in Hong Kong? Will there be explosions of more pro-democracy demonstrations in a way that's going to catch the world's attention?
You know, so of course, as journalists, always like that excitement and explosion. But from what I understand, probably after this week, right away, even if, you know, Pharaoh's heart is very hard in Beijing and there's not any move for compromise, it's probably going to be a few months before you see this Occupy Central go into force. That's what one student leader just told me about an hour and a half ago when I interviewed him. So you may see some student strikes, he said, and because it is the students that are awfully, you know, energetic here and want to make a point. But you may see towards the end of this year if things if there is no compromise and the democracy camp is not happy, you may see this Occupy Central take force in Hong Kong and may see some disruption to Asia's most important financial center.
And if that happens, listeners, you know that you have heard it here beforehand on The Brian Lehrer Show, and read it in the New York Times, where Michael Forsyth wrote a very interesting piece about the anti-democracy protest about a week ago. Thank you so much for joining us from Hong Kong, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Brian.